Killing Osama bin Laden and Arab Spring Fever. Since the 1970s, there had been resentful hostility between Saddam Hussein and Ayatollah Khomeini. Saddam invaded Iran on September 22, 1980 and declared it a province of Iraq. With the support of the Arab states, the United States, and Europe, and heavily financed by the Arab states of the Persian Gulf, Saddam Hussein had become the defender of the Arab world against a revolutionary Iran. But after his 1990 Kuwait invasion, the international community, especially the US, viewed Saddam as a warlike dictator who was a menace to the stability of the region. After the September 11 attacks, President Bush said that he would take action to bring down the Iraqi government because of the threat of its weapons of mass destruction. The Iraqi government and military collapsed within 3 weeks of the beginning of the U.S.-led 2003 invasion. In April 2003, Saddam's whereabouts remained in question during the weeks following the fall of Baghdad and the conclusion of the major fighting of the war. Concerns were raised that perhaps Saddam had put on a disguise or used a double and political decoy. On December 13, 2003, Saddam Hussein was captured in Operation Red Dawn by U.S. forces in a hole at a farmhouse in Ad-Dur near Tikrit. Videotape of the capture showed Hussein with a long beard and uncombed hair as he was being examined following his capture. During the search of a home, troops discovered something in the ground called a spider hole 6 to 8 feet deep, with enough space to lie down like a vampire in a coffin, camouflaged with bricks and topsoil and supplied with an air vent to allow long periods inside. Saddam Hussein was disorientated and taken aback as he came out of the spider hole. He was caught like a rat, said Major General Ray Odierno, of the 4th Infantry Division, during a press conference in Tikrit, Hussein's birthplace, and roughly 100 miles north of Baghdad. It was ironic that he was in a hole in the ground across the river from the great palaces he built using all the money he robbed from the Iraqi people. Saddam Hussein captured like a rat in Iraq 10 years ago today, Fox News, December 13, 2013. By 2002, the Joint Intelligence Committee had compiled a dossier on the weapons of mass destruction possessed by Iraq. But as said by the Hutton Inquiry, Dr. David Kelly, the UK's foremost weapons inspector, gave a warning that alerted the BBC. They are not mobile germ warfare laboratories. You could not use them for making biological weapons. They do not even look like them. They are exactly what the Iraqis said they were, facilities for the production of hydrogen gas to fill balloons. Dr. David Kelly was found dead on the morning of July 18, 2003. Andrew Gilligan, a BBC journalist at the center of the WMD dossier controversy, afterward reflected on shocking facts that had emerged since Dr. Kelly's death. What we now know is that at precisely the same moment as the government was launching hysterical attacks on the BBC and on me for reporting this, Whitehall had quietly conceded that it was true. In July 2003, literally as David Kelly was outed, MI6 secretly withdrew the 45-minute intelligence as unreliable and badly sourced. And what we now know is that, contrary to his campaigning certainty at the time, Blair admits in his memoirs that he privately saw the case for war against Iraq as finely balanced. No wonder a little tipping of the scales was needed, or, as Blair also put it in his book, politicians are obliged from time to time to conceal the full truth, to bend it and even distort it, where the interests of the bigger strategic goal demand that it be done. Andrew Gilligan, The Betrayal of Dr. David Kelly, 10 Years On, The Telegraph, July 21, 2013. As UK Prime Minister Tony Blair got positive feedback from the US Congress on July 17, 2003, the man who had done more than almost any other individual on Earth to contain the threat from WMD lay dead in the woods at Harrow Downhill in Oxfordshire. For Dr. David Kelly, the UK's leading weapons inspector, there was to be no adulation, no medal, no standing ovation. His life ended in the cold, lonely wood where he was found the next morning, his left wrist cut open, and 3 nearly empty blister packs of painkillers in his jacket pocket. His death was, of course, sensational front page news. Dr. Kelly, unknown to almost everybody at the beginning of that July, had in recent days barely been absent from media headlines. Norman Baker, MP. A group of doctors thought it improbable that David Kelly could have bled to death. In his 2007 book, The Strange Death of David Kelly, UK Home Office Minister Norman Baker said MI5 covered up the murder of Dr. David Kelly. My investigations have since convinced me that it is nigh on clinically impossible for Dr. Kelly to have died by his own hand and that both his personality and the other circumstantial evidence strongly militate against suicide. Given that his death was clearly not an accident, that leaves only one alternative, that he must have been murdered. Norman Baker, why I know weapons expert Dr. David Kelly was murdered, by the MP who spent a year investigating his death, The Daily Mail, October 20, 2007. The 2016 Chilkat report said the Iraq war was illegal. MI6 and CIA knew Iraq had no active WMD. Nevertheless, Iraq was invaded with overwhelming power. U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney called it a military policy of shock and awe. Saddam was executed on December 30, 2006. Hussein was sentenced to death by hanging, after being found guilty and convicted of crimes against humanity by the Iraqi Special Tribunal for the murder of 148 Iraqi Shiites in the town of Dujail in 1982, in retaliation for an assassination attempt against him. The July 7, 2005 London bombings, referred to as 7/7, were a series of coordinated terrorist attacks in central London, which targeted civilians using the public transport system during the morning rush hour. Four men detonated four bombs, three in quick succession, aboard London Underground trains across the city and, later, a fourth on a double-decker bus in Tavistock Square. As well as the four bombers, 52 civilians were killed and over 700 more were injured in the United Kingdom's first-ever suicide attack. The official government report stated that the bombers carried out the attacks on their own, constructing explosives from flour and hair bleach mixed in the bath at a flat in Leeds, Yorkshire, where all four had family and friends. However, there has since been a wave of conspiracy theories around the London attacks. In response to revelations about the enormity of security service investigations into the bombers before the acts of violence, the Shadow Home Secretary, David Davis, said in 2007, "It is becoming more and more clear that the story presented to the public and Parliament is at odds with the facts." Jean Charles de Menezes was a Brazilian man shot dead by the Metropolitan Police on the London Underground on July 22, 2005. He was misidentified as one of the fugitives involved in failed bombing attempts. Police and media accounts contradicted each other regarding Menezes's conduct as he entered the tube station, and whether there had been any warnings by police before they fired. Former Scotland Yard anti-terrorist branch official Peter Power coincidentally directed an exercise on July 7, 2005 that had very close parallels to the real thing that very day. A London office near Chancery Lane was chosen as a drill test site. With many staff travelling to work via the London Underground system, the chosen exercise simulated incendiary devices on three trains, very similar to a real IRA attack in 1992, as well as other events. In 2012, a BBC TV series explored facts and challenged the beliefs of conspiracy theorists. One of the more popular accusers then Prime Minister Tony Blair, the government, the police, and the British and Israeli secret services of murdering the innocent people to stir up anti-Islamic fervor and create public support for the war on terror and looming war in Iraq. It also alleges that the four British Muslims were tricked by the authorities into taking part in what they were told would be a mock anti-terror training exercise. What they weren't told, it is claimed, was that the government was going to blow them up, along with other passengers, then pretend the four were suicide bombers. Theorists have also accused government agents of setting off pre-planted explosives under the tube trains and the bus. Matt Blake, fury as BBC documentary airs the views of conspiracy theorists who believe the government plotted 7/7 attacks, Daily Mail, April 5, 2013. In 2008, Barack Obama became the first African American to be elected president. With a father from Kenya and a mother from Kansas, President Obama was born in Hawaii on August 4, 1961. After working his way through college with the help of scholarships and student loans, President Obama moved to Chicago, where he worked with a group of churches to help rebuild communities devastated by the closure of local steel plants. He went on to attend law school, where he became the first African American president of the Harvard Law Review. Upon graduation, he returned to Chicago to help lead a voter registration drive, teach constitutional law at the University of Chicago, and remain active in his community. President Barack Obama, WhiteHouse.gov. The 2009 Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to Barack Hussein Obama II for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. After he launched drone strikes for targeted killings, his popularity diminished. In 2011, Obama dropped a bit of humor about his Nobel Peace Prize and said he was aware that he was a Nobel Peace Prize winner who was launching military airstrikes in Libya. In 2013, Thorbjørn Jagland, chairman of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, suggested that Obama really ought to consider returning his Nobel Peace Prize. Elated crowds celebrated the death of Osama bin Laden after Navy SEALs killed the Al-Qaeda chief in a May 2, 2011 raid in Pakistan. Photos depicting the bloodied and bruised face of bin Laden began appearing on Twitter and Facebook soon after news of his death spread across the internet. According to Reuters, an archive photo of bin Laden at a news conference proved that image was a fake. People were asking to see the evidence proving bin Laden was dead. The Guantanamo Bay detention camp was established as a U.S. detainment facility of the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base on the island of Cuba. The detention camp was created in 2002 by the Bush administration to hold detainees linked to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Guantanamo Bay renovations cost at least $500 million. The base cost taxpayers over $100 million per year to operate. When Osama bin Laden was finally captured in a bedroom without any weapons and only a woman nurse for a bodyguard, it seemed assured that he would be treated as officially pledged, enemy combatants held by the CIA will be transferred to the custody of Department of Defense, and held at Guantanamo Prison. But an opportunity to interrogate the world's primary terrorist at Guantanamo Bay was apparently not very important after all. Bin Laden was allegedly shot in the head instead. Paradoxically, the White House did not consent to shut down the Guantanamo detention camp. Advisors reportedly prepared an executive order allowing for the indefinite detention of some detainees. Former U.S. Navy SEAL Robert O'Neill identified himself as the man who killed Osama bin Laden in a November 6, 2014 interview with The Washington Post. Yet there were contrasting narratives from members of the elite fighting unit about which of them actually killed the Al-Qaeda leader. O'Neill's claim contradicted the version of another SEAL involved in the raid, Matt Bissonnette, in the book, No Easy Day, 2012. The official account of what happened is unlikely to be disclosed by the U.S. government for many years, the BBC commented. Rumors filed by Pakistan's President Pervez Musharraf said that bin Laden had been dead for years, and many bin Laden tapes made since then were concocted by the West to make the world believe bin Laden was alive. Bin Laden had already insisted four times in official Al-Qaeda statements made to the Arab press that he played no role in 9/11. In an interview on November 2, 2007 with Al Jazeera TV channel, Benazir Bhutto said bin Laden was killed by Ahmet Omar Saeed Sheikh, one of those convicted of kidnapping and killing U.S. journalist Daniel Pearl. The first woman leader of Pakistan, Bhutto was killed in a suicide attack at the end of 2007. American Spectator magazine in 2009 quoted former U.S. Foreign Intelligence Officer Angelo M. Codevilla, a professor of international relations at Boston University, as saying, "All the evidence suggests Elvis Presley is more alive today than Osama bin Laden." Professor Codevilla asserted, "The video and audio tapes alleged to be Osama's never convince the impartial observer." Codevilla said, "The guy just does not look like Osama. Some videos show him with a Semitic, aquiline nose, while others show him with a shorter, broader one. Next to that, differences between the colors and styles of his beard are small stuff. Professor Bruce Lawrence, head of Duke University's Religious Studies Department and the foremost Bin Laden expert, also argued that there were inconsistencies in the videos and audio tapes of Osama alleging responsibility for 9/11. In a 2009 book called Osama Bin Laden, Dead or Alive, political analyst and philosopher Professor David Ray Griffin, former emeritus professor at California's Claremont School of Theology, claimed that Bin Laden died of kidney failure, or a linked complaint, on December 13, 2001, while living in Afghanistan's Tora Bora Mountains close to the border with Waziristan. Griffin suggests that Western governments used highly sophisticated, special effects film technology to morph together images and vocal recordings of Bin Laden. Sue Reed, has Osama bin Laden been dead for 7 years, and are the US and Britain covering it up to continue war on terror? Daily Mail, September 11, 2009. When US Navy SEALs raided Osama bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, they expected fierce resistance. But only one shot was fired at them. Having no tunnels or hidden exits, it appeared that the big hideout complex was designed to prevent an escape rather than a surprise attack. Instead of a Mujahideen stately residence, they found a dehumanizing waste. The Abbottabad complex, at first described as a millionaire mansion, proved to be a squalid hideaway. One of Osama's wives claimed she lived in the hideout for 6 years without leaving the upper floors of the house, a Pakistani intelligence official said. Eerily seen, Bin Laden's support network inside Pakistan was adept in techniques of dehumanizing individuals with a regimen of rubbish and sensory deprivation. The Manchurian Candidate, 1959, by Richard Condon, is a political novel about the son of a prominent family who is brainwashed into being an unwitting assassin. The Manchurian Candidate was a 1962 American thriller film with Frank Sinatra and a 2004 remake with Denzel Washington. In Islamic tradition, mind control and thought reform techniques are expressions of sorcery or coercive persuasion dedicated to the breakdown of the soul. An individual's behavior and decisions are manipulated at will by outside forces to shatter psychic integrity. Shocking photographs emerged of dirt-covered rooms and moldy walls in the litter-strewn Abbottabad complex. A coercive dwelling of garbage scraps preserved by a support network of domineering handlers is known to be a regular brainwashing method. Reports that Bin Laden's family spent years in the upper floors without a telephone painted a dismal picture of solitary confinement, psychological harassment, and inculcations of guilt. Did the risk of hunger in an unclean jail brainwash a medical hostage on a kidney dialysis machine to dye his beard and make videotaped speeches? In the Osama bin Laden Abbottabad Library were conspiracy theory classics such as Bloodlines of the Illuminati, by Fritz Springmeier. Washington said that Osama bin Laden was still actively in control of Al-Qaeda at the time he was killed. But bin Laden's immediate family would certainly have lived better and healthier lives in the Guantanamo Bay detention camp. It's bullshit, said a senior Pakistani security official. His body's prompt disappearance fueled conspiracy talk of a brainwashed Mujahideen candidate implanted with electrodes or RFID chips. The Al-Qaeda leader presumably was buried at sea quickly to avoid a funeral procession that could have attracted millions of spectators. Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the man often described as Al-Qaeda's number two, used false passports masquerading Swiss, French, and Dutch citizenship. Zawahiri needed bin Laden's money and brand name. Bin Laden needed a good doctor to treat his impending kidney failure. With billions of dollars under his mattress, Dr. Zawahiri's primary operation was to terrorize the United States. Devout Muslims were warned to choose their friends wisely and to think about the abyss of the Quran. And we shall drive the sinners to hell, like thirsty cattle driven down to water. Maryam, chapter 19, verse 86. Believers in Islam reflected upon burial at sea and the downfall of the soul disgraced in the hereafter driven down to the tarmac of Gehenna and the portals of a porous earth. There a battle for raw and fluid matter takes place where the world's abundance is reckoned. New World Order, NWO, is a generic term used to refer to the emergence of a totalitarian one-world government. It is a turn of phrase that has often been reiterated by politicians and world leaders. In recent times, it sounds like an acknowledged fact that governments refer to in public. It is a big idea, a new world order, according to President George H.W. Bush. Some people consider the NWO to be a plan orchestrated by an extremely powerful and influential group, a secret Freemason organization resembling the Bavarian Illuminati. The highly guarded international think tank known as the Bilderberg Club is often accused of NWO attachment. Also criticized is the historical Bohemian Grove secret society, where some of the world's most powerful and influential men meet in a redwood forest in Monte Rio, California. The private elitists of Bohemian Grove allegedly adulate a 40-foot owl statue, said to represent the fire god Molech, and they participate in an ancient Canaanite ritual of simulated child sacrifice. This mock sacrifice is known as the cremation of care. The Bohemian Club is a rich man's organization that holds a two-week holiday camp in mid-July each year. 2011 was a year of horrendous public relations. The most awful nightmare of Masonic child sacrifice came to the world on July 22, 2011, during the Oslo massacre. Self-styled Knights Templar Anders Breivik, a Norwegian, confessed to a shooting rampage at a liberal political youth camp on Utøya Island of Norway that took 68 young lives, after carrying out a bombing in Oslo, which killed 8 people. A media press kit emerged containing studio photographs of Anders Breivik wearing a Freemason costume, with a detailed diary and a 1,500-page manifesto describing a sect similar to the Illuminati. Some assumed Breivik, age 32, was a hired mercenary that the Illuminis had indoctrinated for a child sacrifice program. Breivik himself, whose father was once a London and Paris diplomat, made mention to police about 2 other active cells of his group in Europe and others abroad. Breivik, who in the manifesto calls himself a justiciar knight commander in the organization, claims that in 2008 there are anywhere from 15 to 80 others with his rank in the group in Western Europe alone. Breivik said the Knights Templar organization, heir to a famed group of Crusades-era Christian knights, was resurrected in 2002 in London by representatives from several European countries to seize political and military control of Western European multiculturalist regimes. ABC News, July 26, 2011. The deadliest U.S. school massacre was at Sandy Hook, Connecticut, December 14, 2012. Some said it was a scripted ritualistic killing. The Colorado Columbine school shooting was on April 20, 1999. The 2011 Oslo bombing of government buildings and the teenager massacres on Utøya Island were among the worst mass killings in recent history. The 1993 Oslo Accords provided for the creation of a Palestinian authority that would have responsibility for the administration of the territory under its control, and for the withdrawal of Israeli forces from parts of the Gaza Strip and West Bank. Donald Trump hired his son-in-law Jared Kushner, an Orthodox Jew, as a senior White House advisor to broker a peace deal between Israelis and Palestinians. He previously owned the most pricey American building at 666 Fifth Avenue. Some pundits expected Kushner to take the place of elderly billionaire casino entrepreneur Sheldon Adelson in adopting policies on Israel. The jihadist terrorist group ISIS wanted to establish a brutal Islamist caliph state on a boundary of Syria known as the Golan Heights. But given that Israel had already occupied that territory since the Six-Day War, which the Palestinians also sought as their homeland, a two-state solution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict seemed on shaky ground by the Trump administration. U.S. demonstrators turned out for protests dubbed Not My President's Day on George Washington's birthday. New York Times columnist Paul Krugman questioned Donald Trump's mental health. Georgia Guid Estens is the name of a large granite monument in Elbert County, Georgia, USA, sometimes referred to as an American Stonehenge. A message comprising 10 guides is inscribed on the structure in several languages. An unknown person, a Rosicrucian, under the pseudonym R.C. Christian, built the structure in 1979. Some said that media mogul Ted Turner was the man who created the GUID Estens. Among its guidelines are beliefs that the world's population should be maintained at fewer than 500 million. Human reproduction should be guided. And a one-world court should be established. Critics of the GUID Estens said that a company linked to the New World Order built the structure as part of a UN-led program called Agenda 21 to cope with population, consumption, and technology. Ronald Reagan, who blamed Libya's assassination teams for a discotheque bombing in Germany, called Colonel Muammar Gaddafi mad dog. The US launched an air strike against Colonel Gaddafi's regime in April 1986. At least 15 people died in the U.S. air strikes on Libya, including leader Colonel Gaddafi's adopted 15-month-old daughter, and more than 100 were injured. A terrorist bomb destroyed Pan Am Flight 103 on December 21, 1988, killing all 243 passengers and 16 crew on board. Large sections of the aircraft crashed into Lockerbie, Scotland, killing 11 more people on the ground. Libyan intelligence officer Abdel Bayset al-Megrahi was convicted of the Lockerbie bombing. Colonel Gaddafi renounced his nuclear weapons program, but in 2011 an armed conflict began in Libya. The Libyan revolution was fought between forces loyal to Gaddafi and those seeking to oust his government. The United Nations Security Council passed a resolution freezing the assets of Gaddafi and his inner circle and restricting their travel, and referred the matter to the International Criminal Court for investigation. Muammar Gaddafi, the ousted leader of Libya, died on October 20, 2011 during the Battle of Sirte. Gaddafi was found hiding in a culvert, a concrete pipe, west of Sirte and captured by National Transitional Council forces. He was killed shortly afterwards. The NTC initially claimed he died from injuries sustained in a firefight when loyalist forces attempted to free him, although videos of his last moments show rebel fighters beating him before he was shot in the head. Muammar Gaddafi planned to introduce the gold dinar, a single African currency made from gold, without the say-so of the IMF and the World Bank. During a visit to Denmark, President Vladimir Putin of Russia asked, who gave coalition forces in Libya the right to eliminate Gaddafi? French President Nicolas Sarkozy was liable. In 2014, it was announced that a former Iranian intelligence officer had admitted that the Lockerbie bombing was ordered by Iran and carried out by a Syrian-based terrorist group. Documents obtained by Al Jazeera presented key figures said to be involved in the Pan Am 103 bombing. A human rights report showed that Gaddafi was not killing civilians. Abolghasem Mesbahi, a defector to Germany, said Pan Am Flight 103 was downed in 1988 in retaliation for a U.S. Navy strike on an Iranian commercial jet 6 months earlier, in which 290 people died. He claims the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was Iran's supreme leader, ordered the bombing to copy exactly what happened to the Iranian Airbus. Previously unseen evidence gathered for the aborted appeal hearing of Abdel Bayset al-Megrahi, the former Libyan intelligence officer convicted of the bombing, supports Mr. Mesbahi's claim and suggests that the bombers belong to the extremist group the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command, PFLPGC. Gordon Rayner, Lockerbie bombing was work of Iran, not Libya, says former spy, The Telegraph, March 10, 2014. Popular uprisings across the Arab world, known as the Arab Spring, began in December 2010, and led to the ousting of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. He was found guilty of complicity to kill protesters by a Cairo court in 2012. Hosni Mubarak became president of Egypt after Islamic fundamentalist army officers assassinated Anwar Sadat during a 1981 parade in Cairo. But in 2017, Hosni Mubarak was found innocent. A sham Arab Spring morphed into a fiasco, akin to the botched Bay of Pigs. Facing a nationwide immigration crackdown, the U.S. court system was not easy with President Trump's immigrant ban for refugees and people from seven Muslim nations. Steve Jobs of Apple Incorporated was the son of a Syrian immigrant. Over the past 200 years, Repeated U.S. presidents, including Carter and Obama, placed restrictions on the immigration of certain groups. After getting rid of our one-time allies in Iraq, Saddam Hussein, and Egypt's Hosni Mubarak, next on the U.S. regime change hit list came Libya's Muammar Gaddafi. In 2007, retired General Wesley Clark revealed a neocon plan he became privy to a couple weeks after September 11 of the ambitious Bush administration agenda to take down seven sovereign governments in the next 5 years that included Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Somalia, Libya, Syria, and Iran. With gusto, President Obama inherited this same agenda and proceeded to finish the job in removing Libya's longtime dictator Gaddafi. And so began the NATO air bombardment of Libya, killing many innocent victims that softened the resistance to an all-out assault on Gaddafi's military forces, largely spearheaded by al-Qaeda mercenaries from all over the Middle East, as well as native Libyan al-Qaeda-affiliated militia groups, some from Benghazi. Joaquim Hagopian, the Benghazi scandal is Obama's Watergate but worse, Global Research, May 2, 2014. On the evening of September 11, 2012, Islamic militants attacked the American diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya, killing U.S. Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens and U.S. Foreign Service Information Management Officer Sean Smith. Several hours later, a second assault targeted a different compound about 1 mile away, killing two CIA contractors. It was initially reported by the media that the September 11, 2012 confrontation was a spontaneous protest triggered by an anti-Muslim video, Innocence of Muslims. But it was later rumored that behind the Benghazi attack, U.S. President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton were supplying arms and funds to the Arab Spring rebels. Some of the militants were affiliated with al-Qaeda and would come forward as prime movers of the Islamic State, aka ISIS. The FBI deemed Hillary extremely careless with email. A bombshell 2017 BBC report confirmed that the U.S. coalition struck a deal with ISIS. According to the book 13 Hours, written in 2014 by Mitchell Zukov, five commandos who were guarding the CIA annex in Benghazi, Libya on the night of September 11, 2012 said that a U.S. official gave a stand-down order that prevented forces from rescuing U.S. Ambassador Stevens, who died in the Benghazi attack. Formerly known as Abu Duay, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi became the caliph of the self-proclaimed Islamic State, previously the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, or the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, ISIS. According to U.S. Department of Defense records, U.S. forces Iraq held al-Baghdadi at Camp Buka as a civilian internee from February until December 2004, at which point a combined review and release board recommended al-Baghdadi for release. In contrast, a number of newspapers and cable news channels reported that al-Baghdadi was interned from 2005 to 2009. He reportedly said, "I'll see you guys in New York," upon his release from a U.S. detention camp in Iraq. Rumors from Iran said that ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was a CIA Israeli Mossad agent and actor called Elliot Shimon. The rumors claimed that NSA documents leaked by Edward Snowden revealed this connection. However, Snowden's lawyer, Ben Wisner, called the story a hoax. Snowden never said anything like that, and no NSA documents suggest it. Some religious and historical scholars in the West believed Hitler was the devil incarnate, as prophesied in the Bible, and even by the noted French clairvoyant Nostradamus. But in the Middle East, the Muslim Grand Mufti of Jerusalem revered Hitler as an avenging spirit. Many Arabs who offered their armies to help the Nazis to cross into Jerusalem, Delhi, Tehran, and Samarkand idolized the German dictator. Yasser Arafat's uncle Haj Amin al-Husseini was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem in the 1920s and 1930s. His extreme harshness was the recruitment of tens of thousands of Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina and Albania to the Nazi SS. "Kill the Jews wherever you find them," he said during a 1944 Berlin broadcast. On November 28, 1941, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem Haj Amin al-Husseini met with the Nazi Führer in Berlin. Yasser Arafat was chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, and leader of the Fatah political party. A Palestinian group massacred 11 Israeli team members at the 1972 Olympics in Munich. Arafat engaged in the 1993 Oslo Accords negotiating with Israel to end the conflict between it and the PLO. He was awarded the 1994 Nobel Peace Prize with Israeli Prime Ministers Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres. Yigal Amir, a right-wing Orthodox Jew who opposed the Oslo Accords, assassinated Rabin in 1995. Yasser Arafat died on November 11, 2004 at the age of 75 of what French doctors said was a hemorrhagic stroke. Yasser Arafat's personal physician alleged that he was poisoned. Benjamin Netanyahu said Haj Amin al-Husseini motivated the Nazi final solution. The Egyptian-born physician Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri raised funds that were used for the Egyptian embassy attack in Islamabad, Pakistan in 1995, and the USS Cole bombing in 2000. He got to know his enemy at first hand by living in Western Europe and the US. Dr. Zawahiri met Osama bin Laden, the son of a prominent Saudi family, in 1989. They had much in common, including wealthy backgrounds and a zeal for the fundamentalist Muslim cause. Zawahiri by then convinced that the only way to Muslim victory was through violent overthrow of moderate Arab regimes became a mentor to bin Laden, said fellow radical Montasser al-Zayed. He became bin Laden's teacher, shaping his mind toward the idea of holy war, said al-Zayed, who a decade later defended his friend in a military court in Cairo that sentenced Zawahiri to death in absentia for terrorist acts inside Egypt. Bin Laden transformed then, and that was the basis for Al-Qaeda. Ida Torriero and Michael Martinez, Chicago Tribune. By the late 19th century, Masonic lodges were scattered across the Ottoman Empire, from Constantinople where young Turks were beguiled by the secretive brotherhood, to Greater Syria and Egypt where emerging nationalists aped their European assailant. With time, inter- and intra-Freemasonry rivalries increased in proportion to the numbers of lodges that surfaced all over Egypt. We may perhaps also give them the benefit of the doubt, and suppose that they have little or no positive knowledge of the extreme views and policy of some members of local lodges that are in touch and sympathy with Egyptian Freemasons and working in the same subterranean way in Cairo, Alexandria, etc. For some of the ultra-chauvinistic Masons here are working with the anti-Khedive and anti-English parties in Egypt, and an Arab deputy and Mason stated recently that he had good reason to suppose that one of their back thoughts was, by propaganda occasional display of the Ottoman fleet at Alexandria, to foster unrest and eventually lead up to disorders, in the course of which His Highness the Khedive would be made to disappear by the Black Hand, and a member of the Halim branch be appointed regent of the Khedive's son on the lines of the recent dynastic change in Persia. The Young Turks Committee of Union and Progress undoubtedly encouraged and cooperated with the Persians in this latter event, and there is now question of starting a Persian Grand Orient, Farajullah Khan, the new Persian charge d'affaires, having recently become a Mason. The type of chauvinistic Young Turk who holds such views is an Asiatic nationalist, and, no matter how grateful he may feel to a European government for services rendered, would consider it his patriotic duty to help other Orientals rightly struggling to be free in Egypt or in India, to attain their freedom from European bondage. The committee's policy is not guided by sentimental considerations, and any power that expects gratitude for services rendered to Young Turkey would be making an egregious miscalculation. Sir Gerard Lowther, British ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, 1910. Cenk Wigur and Anna Kasparian hosted the Young Turks, TYT, news and commentary YouTube channel. A cynical misinterpretation of Islam began decades ago by such romantic idealists as the Pakistani Abulala Maudadi and the Egyptian Sayyid Qutb. Although Maudadi and Qutb were not serious thinkers, they could, at least offer a coherent ideology based on a narrow reading of the Islamic texts. Their ideas, distilled down to bin Laden, became mere slogans designed to incite zealots to murder. People like Maudadi and Qutb could catch the ball and run largely because most Muslim intellectuals did not deem it necessary to continue the work of Muslim philosophers. Modern Muslim intellectuals, seduced by fashionable Western ideologies, left the new urban masses of Islam's teeming cities exposed to the half-baked ideas that Maududi and Qutb peddled. In time, Maududo-Qutbism provided the ideological topography in which bin Ladenism could grow. Now, however, many Muslim intellectuals are returning home, so to speak. They are rediscovering Islam's philosophical heritage and beginning to continue the work started by pioneers of Islamic political thought over 1,000 years ago. Paradoxically, it is Maududo-Qutbism that is now being exposed as a pseudo-Islamic version of Western totalitarian ideologies. Amir Tahiri, Arab News Staff. In 2018, ISIS claimed responsibility after a gunman killed a woman and a child in Toronto's Greek town. At the same time, Greece's worst wildfires killed over 90. Authorities suspected arson. Birther conspiracy theories denied that Barack Obama was eligible by birth to be the President of the United States. Donald Trump prompted Obama to release his long-form birth certificate but later said that Obama was born in the USA. Theories allege that Obama's published birth certificate is a forgery, that his actual birthplace is not Hawaii but Kenya. Other theories allege that Obama became a citizen of Indonesia in childhood, thereby losing his U.S. citizenship. Still others claim that Obama is not a natural-born U.S. citizen because he was born a dual citizen, British and American. A number of political commentators have characterized these various claims as a racist reaction to Obama's status as the first African-American president of the United States. Wikipedia.org. When Loretta Fuddy, the Hawaii State Health Director who verified and approved the release of President Obama's birth certificate, died tragically in a 2013 plane crash off the island of Molokai, the birther movement pounced. Fuddy was the only fatality in the crash. All the passengers, including Fuddy, safely evacuated the plane and activated life vests, but according to a newly released autopsy, Fuddy suffered a cardiac arrhythmia while floating in the water, waiting for rescuers. Carla Hararia, Loretta Fuddy's cause of death finally revealed, The Huffington Post, January 13, 2014. In 2008, WND reported that Barry Soetoro, was the name used to register six-year-old Barack Obama at Jakarta, Indonesia's Roman Catholic Franciscus Assisi Primary School by his stepfather, Lolo Soetoro. The school registration card lists Barry Soetoro as an Indonesian citizen born August 4, 1961, in Honolulu, Hawaii. His religion was listed as Muslim. Obama's American mother, Ann Dunham, separated from her first husband, Barack Obama Sr., in 1963 when the future president was 2 years old. Dunham and Obama Sr. later divorced. Dunham married Lolo Soetoro, an Indonesian, and moved to Indonesia sometime between 1966 and 1967. Druzan, Barry Soetoro registered to vote in D.C. WND.com, July 19, 2013. Critics said that Obama used the name Barry Soetoro to receive financial aid as a foreign student from Indonesia as an undergraduate. In 2013, Pastor James Manning, Manning Report, said he interviewed Mia Marie Pope, a high school friend of Barack Obama, who claimed to have known him in the 1970s as Barry Soetoro. Pope said that when Barry's name began to be pushed forward as Barack Hussein Obama, she thought there was something evasive going on. Maybe President Obama's most challenging enterprise was the Obamacare health care proposal. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was signed into law on March 23, 2010. But Barack Obama's most controversial opening came from a televised address to the nation. In a dramatic late-night broadcast on May 2, 2011, President Obama announced that the illicit mastermind behind the most horrible terrorist attacks had been buried at sea in a Muslim funeral. The terse announcement provoked skepticism. Politicians are obliged from time to time to conceal the full truth, to bend it and even distort it. Many thought the terrorist had died years in the past. And the decision to bury the body at sea was questioned by some Islamic scholars. Muslims are not allowed to bathe in the deep, because it is the abyss. In the view of sacred scriptures, The devil is buried in the abyss, buried alive.